Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the best time you can have if you're a wrestling fan on Sunday night. This is Dr. John Stamey and welcome to Wrestling Tonight. We've got a great show, wonderful people, and we're going to have the best time you can have on the internet for an hour and a half. I would like to first introduce my co-host from the soon-to-be chilly Chicago, Chaz Moretti. How are you, Chaz?
Oh, I'm fine, Dr. John. Thank you for asking. It's not soon to be chilly. It's chilly up here now, and I'll tell you, we skipped fall, went right to winter up here. Oof.
Well, that's okay. I was up in the Midlands of South Carolina for several days, had on a jacket. I'm back down here, got a short sleeve shirt on. I love Myrtle Beach, I'll tell you that. Well, we're glad to have you, and I would like to introduce two of our co-hosts, and then I want you to get to the man of the hour. Actually, he's probably the man of the decade, but we'll let you get to the man of the hour. After I first introduce ladies first, from Springdale, Arkansas, Granny Hulkster. How are you, Granny?
Well, Dr. John, I'm fine. Thank you for asking, and always a pleasure to be on with you all.
We're always glad to have you.
We're glad to have you.
Yep, and here he is. Let me bring him on. Here he is, sneaking in from Richmond, Virginia, the professor of wrestling, Steve Logan. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. I'll be listening in, but I might have some comments or questions later. And I'm doing good. New Japan G1 Climax 30 tournament just wrapped up this weekend, so lots of wrestling to catch up on later.
I know you're excited. And, of course, in the middle of his trip, from the West Coast to the East Coast, one of our favorite people in the world, the old wild man himself, Malcolm Wildman. How are you doing tonight, buddy?
Well, I was in Walmart and I was wearing my Hulkamania jacket I bought at Christmas last year from the WWE shop, and this guy said, Hulkamania, brother. Like, I'm really loving it.
Wait. Hold it. That's the best you got for us tonight, Malcolm? You're not going to give us a real Hulk Hogan? Come on.
No, I was just talking about him. I'll do something big, you know, on the show. But,
cool.
Yeah. But Chaz, I'm in Sydney, Nebraska. It's cold here, and I love it, man. I haven't been cold like this since I was in the Army. Last time I was in Macedonia in Germany. I'm loving
it. God bless you.
Yeah.
Well, we're glad you're in Sydney, not Australia, but. Sydney, Nebraska. We hope you got a great hotel room, and we're glad to have you with us on the one, the only Wrestling Tonight. Well, Chaz, I want you to introduce the man of the day and the man of the decade right now, kind sir. Our first guest tonight on Wrestling Tonight.
Not a problem. This man is a man that needs no introduction the world over, but I'm going to do him the honor of one. He is the true godfather of professional wrestling, the president and CEO of the North American Wrestling Alliance, which is going to be back with a vengeance very soon. I give you the one and only Tony Capone. Tony, how are you tonight?
I'm doing great. Great, Chaz. Thank you for having me on. Dr. John, Granny Hulkster, how are you? My man Malcolm, how's everything going tonight?
Good.
And Steve, of course, Steve.
Glad to be on.
No, Tony, let's get right down to it. We hear so many announcements about the NAWA. What's going on this week?
Well, there's a lot happening. As you're aware, we mentioned it last week also, it's official. The NAWA is coming back, and it's going to start with the Ocean Center in Daytona Beach, Florida, Saturday night, December 19th. It is going to be live on Fight TV. It's going to be a pay-per-view event with a half-hour live pre-show. And it's going to be broadcasted right now in English and Spanish, and we're trying to have other translations with other companies right now as we speak. So talent has been signed. I can just tell you that unofficially or officially, the card will be announced this week, but we do have, as it's been announced on the website and on NAWA Wrestling and Tony Capone, NAWA Facebook, that Gangrel is going to be on the show. The Mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart's going to be on the show.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. Hey, this is going to be on the show, you know, and we're in final negotiations with one and only Dave Moore-Smith Jr., you know, British Bulldog, second generation, you know, and it doesn't get better than that, I'll tell you. We've been reaching out to all the top stars, James Storm, Chad Stevens, Taylor Storm. I mean, they're all out there, and we're going to have a elite of the elite at the Ocean Center for Jingle Brawl on December 19th in Daytona Beach, Florida.
Wow, what a lineup.
That is awesome news. You're right. What a lineup. And we're not even, and you're not even done announcing that lineup. My God, what a show that's going to be.
One thing I can tell you that just took place this week, and it hasn't been announced yet. It'll probably come out live, I would say, Wednesday or Thursday this week. And this is why the Wrestling Tonight is such a great platform for the end of the way for the fans to get an inside look of what's happening. We have finalized the deal with Fight TV on a long-term agreement. And starting the first Thursday of January, we are going to have a weekly program free on Fight TV. And it's going to be a weekly wrestling program, just like anyone else that's out there. We are negotiating with national organizations also, national television. But right now we decided to accept the offer that Fight TV has offered us. So starting the first Thursday of January at 8 p.m., you'll be able to see NAWA live each and every week.
Wow, that's great. I mean, you know, Fight TV has come such a long way in terms of being recognized in a widely streamed platform that it's just it's awesome that we're and by me I mean the NAWA are connected with Fight TV. That's just great news.
Yeah, no, it was a it's been a long road to get to where we're at with Fight TV. We're just not another independent organization that's out there, and the owner of Fight TV realizes that and has given us a unique platform, a different type of agreement than any other company that has out there. And you just have to wait and see. Our preview video for Jingle Brawl will be out this week. Should be out by Wednesday, Thursday this week. And tickets will be officially on sale as of Wednesday. And we're just wrapping up everything. Took us a little bit behind because of the pandemic to put everything into place. But it's there and everything's coming in as we speak. So the official announcement will probably be Wednesday or Thursday this week through Ocean Center, Ticketmaster, and through Fight TV.
That's great. No, that's great. And you said earlier that ticket announcements as far as buying tickets to the event will be also made later on.
That's correct. It'll be out sometime this week. Tickets are ranging from low 20s to mid 50s for front row. Ringside, and it's very comfortable for what you're getting for the amount of talent that's on the show. There's a lot of thought that went into it. The pay-per-view event is going to be priced at $14.99, which we try to make it as reasonable as possible, but there's expenses. There's a lot of expenses doing a live event, the caliber that we're doing it. We could have gone a cheap way, cheap production, but our debut has to be the best of the best, or else I wouldn't do it. That's just me personally.
Absolutely. I mean, that we, you know, the NAWA has touted all along that we are going to be back with a vengeance. And, you know, we mean what we say. It's going to happen. And I think the fans recognize that. And I think that it's going to get only bigger and better.
Well, there's so much to talk about, but I want to give credit to Charlie Bernese. He was one of my original TV camera guys, him and Ron, back in the days. And they became very famous for the ECW production from beginning to end. And I'm proud to announce that Charlie is on board with me full time, and he is going to be the actual director for the production. And it's his camera crew and his guys that are going to be doing the live streaming. So it's going to be a unique style. And Charlie and myself are speaking on a daily basis in regards to what our vision is. And he's on board. So we've had a lot of free productions behind the scene. But I'd like to give a shout out to Charlie Bernese for his help in relaunching the NAWA and getting it back to where it's going to be.
Very good. Very good. You know, Tone, you and I can talk all night long, but I think I want to open it up to the panel a little bit and see if Dr. John, Steve, and Malcolm and Granny might have some questions or some comments about what's going on with the NAWA. If you don't mind, I'd like to do that. How's that sound?
No, that's fine. There's other things I want to talk about. That's great right now, just to break the monotony a little bit. And sure, shoot away. Let's go.
All right, very good. All right, guys, please feel free. Let's keep it to one question per for this round, and then Tony's going to make some further announcements.
All right, so Dr.
who would like to start?
Got a question for you, okay?
All right, very good, Dr. John. Go ahead.
Are you ready? I was talking tonight. Actually, I was visiting a little bit today with Susan Green, and we have determined that she was, back in the day, the NAWA World Heavyweight Women's Champion. Do you remember those days?
Dr. John, you got me there. Vaguely, I remember back to the early days, but no, I do and I don't. There's so much history and people that are coming out from the past and a lot of things that we did, and it's just looking at old footage that's starting to come out from back in the days when we first started in the late 80s. It's just there's so much there that's been pressed or hidden over the years inside of me, and it's all starting to come out and literally being brought to the forefront, and it's amazing day by day footage and the stuff that I'm finding. It's like, well, I don't even remember that. I don't remember even being there at ringside, you know, but it's great. And, yeah, there's a lot of other announcements about stuff that we just found and everything else going on. But I do and I don't to a degree, if that helps answer your question.
Right. I can tell you that just posted on YouTube is a title defense by Susan Green against Leilani Kai. And I tell you what, those girls could wrestle like you wouldn't believe. It was great. We're going to have Susan on later tonight. I hope you can stay on to enjoy talking with her just a little bit when she comes on.
Oh,
she's just a great,
honor.
Great lady.
It'd
yeah.
Be
okay.
Be
well,
on.
Super.
Yeah,
well, that,
so
that was my
there.
Reflection.
Great.
That was a reflection question, Tony. How was that one?
That was good. That was good. It got me thinking there for a second, Dr. John. I give you credit, boy.
Okay.
All right, anybody else? Granny, Malcolm, Steve?
Yeah, I was definitely glad to hear that you announced Gangrel and Gallegos. I don't really have any questions. I just wanted to comment on it before interviews get started. But, yeah, definitely looking forward to more announcements on the debut card.
Thank you, Steve. Oh, I do appreciate it. Like I said, we're really trying to put – this is not just one day. We've been working for talent for about 6 to 8 weeks nonstop, and we're bringing the best of the best who's out there in the independent from either ROH or Impact, TNA, MLW. Doesn't make a difference. Bottom line is I have them. We have them in the NAWA, you know, from the Slambinos to Gangrel. I mean, all of them, James Storm. I mean, just we try to take the best of the best out there, and I'm actually privileged to say that I have a roster of these caliber of guys willing to come on board with the NAWA. It's very humbling.
That's awesome. Granny, Malcolm, anything from you guys?
And also Velvet's with us too, Chaz. He just came on board.
There goes the neighborhood.
That's right.
Well, I really don't have any questions, but December 19th, that is a special day for Granny because that's mine and my husband's. That's going to be our 11th year wedding anniversary. And
right.
That would be such an awesome thing to get to see, you know. I mean, being that my husband and I both love wrestling, but like I said, I'm just excited about the more big announcements coming. I can't wait to see this. I mean, this is going to be amazing. I mean, it just sounds so exciting.
Thank you so much, Granny. I really do appreciate this. And it's just basically not just the wrestling fans in the United States, but we do have a following internationally. And it's not just for a U.S. base. This is really bringing international fans to our card, to our venue, to our event. And I really believe with the organization that's behind us that we have, and we're on the right track right now. It's just a matter of this is like a 10,000 piece jiggle, you know, jigsaw puzzle. You know, it's not like a 50 piece one. So there's so many little components, especially with the relaunch, to get everything together between websites and venues and reaching out to other places in the United States to throw events and negotiating certain deals in other countries. It's a lot of work, but long-term, it's all going to pay off. And Granny, thank you so much. I do appreciate your support and what we're doing and your family's support also. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
All right, so where's our resident Cornhusker? Malcolm, you're in the spotlight, brother.
Yeah, Tony, I think it's great that Davey Boy Smith Jr., Harry Smith. He's one of my best friends from Big Time Wrestling. I'm so excited to see him again at this event. And then you mentioned, oh, I love this guy. I've met him 2 times. Tennessee Cowboy James Storm at Beer Money Incorporated in TNA. Sorry about your damn luck. I just love that guy, man.
Oh, Malcolm. Oh, Malcolm, man. I love you, Malcolm. You're the best. I tell you.
I can't meet you guys. I'm serious. I'm excited.
Malcolm, I became a fan of yours. I'll tell you, you're one of a kind. You're unique, and you know, I'm humbled that we're friends. I really do. I do appreciate your friendship.
Well, you know what, Tony? I've been wearing my Hulk Hogan jacket from the WWE shop I got Christmas last year.
Huh?
And what you gonna do with Tony Capone and the NAWA and Chas Murray Rumble Destroy and Run Wild on you, brother?
You're going to pop a one vessel one day doing that.
Chad, can I follow up on something?
Yeah, go ahead, Steve.
I am also glad to hear the announcement of Harry Smith being signed, because I like his work in MOW, especially against some of these actors. So also a good get by NAWA.
Thank you, Steve. I do appreciate that. And you know, just if you could read between the lines, you know, you never know. There might be a guest from Harry's family on the show. And you just never know.
Oh, nice.
That'd be interesting.
My family and I got to meet Harry Smith at a CWA show down in Maumelle, Arkansas. Oh, gosh, how long ago was it? It was several months ago, because before the pandemic hit. He was such an awesome guy. I mean, just absolutely amazing.
Oh, he is so easy to deal with and such a professional. Really, it's been great talking to him and negotiating with him, and just so down to earth. You know, I mean, you know, with his family legacy, you would think a wrestler like that would have some kind of an attitude, or no, he is like so down to earth and so easy to talk to. And with the fans, I see them interact with fans, and it's just incredible the way Harry presents himself overall. It really is.
Yeah, he was absolutely amazing. Just, it was so wonderful to get to meet him. So,
you know what? What I think is so interesting about having Harry Smith on board is it fits along so perfectly with one of our themes, which is basically old school wrestling with a new school vibe. I mean, if anybody embodies that, it's Harry Smith.
Absolutely. I mean, his dad was by far such an incredible worker, and the whole family. And I was privileged and honored to be with the WWF back in those days, doing house shows in the dressing room and, you know, behind the scenes with them. And, you know, personify class act. I can't say nothing negative about the family in general. I really can't. They are one of the wrestling families that you look up to. And, you know, some great talent came out of Stu Hart's Dungeon. And, you know, the rest is history, what came out of Stampede up in Canada. I mean, it really is.
Oh, sure. Definitely. All right, now I have to let him speak before he starts crying and starts calling my wife and talking badly about me. The Amazing Velvet, welcome to the show. Really? Okay. Oh, you know I love you. I love you about as much as Granny loves me.
That's funny. Oh man, it's all good. No, I think everything is looks like it's motoring right along for NAWA and Tony. That's awesome, dude. I wish y'all all the best. I think it's gonna be awesome. I can't wait to see what else is coming. I'm enjoying every bit. Every time I hear something, I enjoy every bit of it.
Well, I appreciate that, Velvet. I mean, it's really it's tiresome working nonstop, and you know, Charlie,
oh, yeah.
He knows what's going on behind the scenes, and it's just like so much work, you know, 20, 22 hours and sometimes 48 hours straight nonstop, you know, just that inner drive to make this happen the right way, you know. And if I can parlay that into, you know, a second part of like announcements and stuff, you know, when we started talking about going on the road and we started looking about, you know, outside of New York, and, you know, Daytona opened up because of the pandemic.
Right.
That's how this whole Florida started. And I want to give a special shout out to a very personal friend of mine who was actually, as of today, still the commissioner of the NAWA. His name is Big Daddy, the Guardian of Chaos. And he does a radio podcast of his own, which is on Twitter and all the other YouTube channels and everything else. But every Thursday night he does a show with a unique gentleman named Dino, Patrick Ryan Show. And he's out of Wyoming. And, yeah, I got to informally meet Patrick Ryan, and, you know, he's a big star on Sirius Radio and everything else. And he opened up the doors for us to start with Wyoming. And it, you know, started as a joke, but we're in final stages where I have two contracts out right now to finalize for 2021 to go to Cheyenne, Wyoming, and to go to Casper, Wyoming, and then, you know, the Riley Arena. So, you know, there's three areas in Wyoming that we're going to spread out to sometime in 2021 outside of our New York base, Florida base, and now we're going to be in Wyoming. And there's certain negotiations in Las Vegas as we speak right now. So it's all coming together, you know, so it's not one event. We're actually getting our roster and our event schedule for 2021. And, you know, we're being careful because the pandemic's still here. We don't know if it's going to open or close. And, you know, you don't want to start booking stuff and then you have to change things. So it's a tough time right now, but I'm moving forward positive, thinking that, hey, it's all going to be good. And that's the way I think. I take the negativity out and just move positive. So, yeah, like I said, I want to give a special shout-out to Big Daddy, Guardian of Chaos, and Dino from the Patrick Ryan Show, who's a big supporter of the NWA. And for him opening up doors for us in the Wyoming area, which will be there, like I said, in 2021.
Well, there you have it, fans. Cheyenne, Wyoming, Casper, Wyoming, NAWA going out to the Great White West. It's going to be awesome. Now, Tony, you said you had a few other things you wanted to talk about. The floor is yours, my friend.
Well, I mean, we reached out, and we've been reaching out for the last 6 months or so at least, and reaching out to a lot of people that worked with the NAWA, not just wrestlers per se, but other personalities, you know, stars and celebrities. And, you know, a couple of them have gotten back to me, but also I'd just like to give a special shout-out to, you know, Fred the Elephant Boy, you know, from the Howard Stern Show, who was back on the Howard Stern Show and who was a big supporter of the NAWA back in 99 to 2002 and was on tour with us, and just spoke to him recently again. And, you know, he's back on board with the NAWA. And I'd like to give a special shout-out to, you know, Fred the Elephant Boy, who's going to be, you know, parlaying as a semi-celebrity with the NWA in conjunction with calls that are out to Chuck Zito from Oz and, you know, Vinny Pastor from The Sopranos and Michael Imperioli and Larry Romano, all those crew guys that worked with the NWA to get it to where it was back in those days, and just that nostalgia, starstruck feeling to it. In addition to all the stars and celebrities from my area, which is Mount Vernon, New York, that's where I was born and raised, and that's where the NWA originally originated from day one.
Wow. I mean, you just, Harry, you got me speechless. I mean, that lineup alone of people that are just giants in the entertainment field that are connected and were connected with the NAWA is it's mind-boggling, to say the least.
It really is. And, you know, a lot of people, like I said, we never really, outside of what we did at Sports Channel America and our comeback in 99 to 2002, and then we started doing small house shows, not small house shows, but house shows in the New York area to 2016. But, you know, behind the scenes, these guys and, you know, specifically the Soprano crew, I mean, they were at the Westchester County Center scouting our wrestlers to be, you know, bid parts on, you know, the Sopranos. And, you know, that whole, my personal background has always been in the entertainment field, you know, from boxing to wrestling to comedy to music.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, every genre. And, you know, that, all I can tell you is there's going to be major surprises in the NWA. It's one thing that I've done, excuse me, from day one. When we do a show, there's always going to be an element of surprise. And I can tell you that's the same thing going to happen in Daytona Beach at the Ocean Center. There's going to be something there that's not going to be announced, and people are going to be, oh, my God, he's doing it again, you know, and that's going to be the reputation that we're going to get back that we had before. Those little surprises that take place at the last minute that no one knows about. It could be a former wrestler that just left WWE, or maybe AEW or something to that matter, or it could be a star celebrity that just might show up, or a singer. You just never know with the NAWA.
That's just awesome. I mean, it's It's going to be a star-studded. It's going to be a magical night, December 19th, at the Ocean Center in Daytona Beach, Florida. And for fans that are looking for an event to attend, this is going to be it. And what better could you ask for? I mean, Florida in December? That's going to beat the heck out of the Northeast and the Midwest, that's for sure.
Oh, I just so wish Granny was so much closer. I would love to be there.
Granny, I can't wait. It's starting to get cold in New York already, and I'm just like, I'm not used to this weather anymore in the New York area. It's just, you know, we went from 80s to 50s in a matter of like 2 weeks, and it's like, oh, it's going into my bones already. It's like, oh, please.
Oh, I know. Friday morning we were like in the low 30s. We had a small little frost here in Arkansas, you know, and we haven't had a bad winter in I don't know how many years, but it's the temperatures have been really crazy, so.
Yeah,
I
see that.
We're still in the 80s over here in Myrtle Beach, I tell you that.
Yeah, sure, rub it in.
That's right, I'll do that, Doug. Right to you. I'll give you an angel key. You can come down here and sit on the beach. I'll come up to Chicago.
I'm there.
Yeah, come sit on the beach with us, man.
That works for me.
Exactly right. You can go see Velvet. He's down in Charleston.
Tony, thank you so much for all these announcements, as always. I mean, our fans, we get feedback and we get messages all the time from fans and new listeners that are tuning into wrestling tonight that are very, very excited about the happenings with the North American Wrestling Alliance and can't wait to hear more as we draw closer to December 19th. So thank you so much for always keeping us in the loop in terms of what's going on with the NAWA.
No, it's always my pleasure to actually associate with the Wrestling Tonight platform as a insider to the NAWA, and pretty much, you know, the first one that knows really what's going on. And a lot of respect to you guys for associating with the NAWA and putting us on this platform. Thank you, all of you.
It's our pleasure.
You're welcome.
So we would hope that you'll stay on for the remainder of the show as we interview Susan Green.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
I'm going to throw it back to Dr. John.
Thank you very much. Tony, I've got another back-in-the-day question. I know this is one you'll have the answer right on the tip of your tongue because you were quite a fine, fine wrestler. And when you were a wrestler, what do you think, and just tell us a little bit about one of the toughest matches that you ever had as a professional wrestler?
Wow, that's easy and that's hard. You know, out of all the WF guys that I had angles with, you know, from Nikolai Volkov, Jimmy Snuka, Ravishing Rick Rude, you know, Hercules Hernandez, I have to be honest with you, Hercules Hernandez probably gave me the not just the fight of my life in the ring, but a special unique style and knowledge of the business. Like, if you want to say, taught me the inside of the business like a brother, really took me under his wing. And, you know, I'm honored to say it was a year and a half, 2 years that we worked together, and not just the angle itself, but, you know, call me from Tampa, like, hey, we're going to do this, and this is what's going to happen here. And then, you know, you go into a ring, and it's not what we expected. And it's like, you know, I remember going back in the dressing room, like, you know, what the F? And it's like, you know, never trust your opponent. You know, I mean, there's only so many spots. I mean, just the things I learned from him and just pushing me. Because you gotta remember, I was like 6'1 and a half, 6'2. I was like 365 to almost 400 pounds. And, you know, he's the one that got me to start loosening up. And, you know, because I used to be like such a nervous, tight wrestler. And he's the one that when I worked with him, that it finally, it was it. I finally got it. You know, after two and a half years, the time I worked with him, I got it. I did a small thing with Jimmy Snuka for like 6-8 months, Nikolai Volkov, you know, Brooklyn Brawler, but it was Hercules Hernandez, you know, by far the person that really excelled me as a wrestler to the career. And I have a lot of respect for, you know, God rest his soul, for Ray and his family, you know, Debbie and the family. And up to today, we're still in contact together.
Okay, well, that was a good question. It opened up a little bit of a can of worms, but yeah, it sounds like, I mean, we know you've had a great career, and we appreciate it. For those that don't know, About when did you start in professional wrestling? And I know you're still in it. You're in a different part of it. But when did you start, and what got you involved in professional wrestling?
That's a great question, and I'm really excited to answer that. I was working out, you know, daily at a place in Pelham, New York called Metro Fit. And, you know, one day I'm there on a Wednesday night, I'll never forget it. And it was like 6:30 at night. And I turn around and, you know, my first trainer ever, SD Jones, was training in the gym. And, you know, I was always like, you know, even though I was a fan, you know, you respected the stars. So I was never one up to go, hey, you know, whatever the case was. So here I'm doing, you know, full leg bench presses and everything else. And he comes up to me, I'll never forget it. He goes, hey, kid, you like wrestling? And I'm like, God, I mean, I'm watching you on TV every week. Of course I do, and I know who you are. And he's like, I want you to meet me down in the Bronx in Co-op City. And he told me this gas station to meet him on a Saturday morning. So I didn't ask no questions. I went there, and we start driving down to Brooklyn. And as we're driving in the car, you know, he starts talking. He's like, do you ever think about being a wrestler? And I'm like, yeah. And he goes, well, you know. And he took me down the, you know, down the block from Gleason Gym, which he was down there with Bobby Boldeagle, who was back in the old WWF days. And, you know, started training me one by one. And that was in 1987 that SD Jones took me under his belt and, you know, opened up the door to me for professional wrestling. That opened up the door for me for who I am today. And from there, I did my training down there. And I wanted more of a rugged, tough style to wrestling. So I ended up going through a circuit. It was a place in Orange, Connecticut, Milford, Connecticut, called Passerelle's Quest. And that was the unofficial WWF training ground. And, you know, they had like a Hall of Fame signature, and everyone from Hogan to whoever trained in that particular camp. So I went up there, and my first training was with Dr. D. Davis Schultz back in the days. And Dave was there for a short period of time, and then I went to Tony Altomare, you know, the Sicilians with Albano back in the days. And then from there, it ended up to my mentor, Mario Mancini, who, again, took me under his wing in 1989, 1990, and the rest is history. So it's a combination of all those guys together that got me opening up the door. But it was actually back in 86, 87, that the first debut. Actually, I debuted in 87, trained in 86.
Gotcha. Now, who did you debut again? Who was that first match with?
First match, he was a brand new wrestler on the independent circuit back in the days. It was for a company called IWF in they were based out, I think, out of like Brantford or Wallingford, Connecticut. And it was with a gentleman named Daytona Drake. That was his gimmick name at the time. And we did quite a bit of tour the independent circuit back in the days. Great kid, great guy. You know, I don't call it one kid, but great guy. And that was my first match. And believe it or not, it was an outside wrestling show at a car dealership, believe it or not. And that was like one of my first matches, where that was like beginning stage of Godfather Image, and it just started to transform from there. And over the next 6 months, there was a whole angle where it was a trainer against student, which I did some stuff with Mario Mancini, who just came off of WWF TV at the time. And yeah, but Tony Drake was my first wrestling match ever in the sport of professional wrestling for a company called IWF. Mike Peskin, Mike Incognito, Mr. Electricity. That was my first show ever.
All right, I got to ask. If you said it, I didn't catch it. Who won the match?
Dr. John, do you really have to ask?
Yeah, who are we talking to here? You're talking to the godfather of pro wrestling.
I got to ask another question.
Oh, here we go.
When was the last time?
What did you say, Steve?
Did you say the newest screw job or the Montreal? Or what?
I was saying maybe there's a screw job. Like, I don't know.
No, that was
you got me off track. Hey, Steve, since you got me off track, it's your question next to Tony Capone.
Is there any matches online of yours that we could go back and watch later?
Yeah, actually, to be honest with you, back in those days, not that much was really recorded, but pretty much everything that I did was recorded one way or another. And, you know, I'm proud that over the last year and a half of pulling out my catalog, there is tapes that are going to be coming out very shortly, I would say within the next month to 6 weeks. And it does have matches in there with myself with Daytona Drake. It has my first match ever. It has angles with Mario Mancini. It has matches with myself and Jimmy Snuka, matches with myself and Hercules, everything from the early days. And what's funny is somebody that Dr. John got to know on a personal level recently, one of my longtime buddies in the business, Steve Ray from the UWF, and I have a unique, never seen before on our angle, a house show with, it was, I had the semi main event that night, and I think it was against Daytona Drake, if I'm correct. And this is one of our first co-promotion shows ever. And I have Dr. Death Steve Williams versus Steve Ray, never been seen on the internet ever. It's footage that Herb Abrams doesn't even have. And when I saw the footage, I was taken back, Steve. It was just like, I remember that night like it was yesterday. It was just, you know, it was a behind-the-scenes look. And we were able to find, I had a wrestling program called Wrestling Connection back in the days, and it turned out to be an NWA Wrestling Connection, and it was just basically a half-hour talk show about every independent organization, what WWF was doing back in the days, NWA, Global, New Japan, everyone, Stampede, Smoky Mountain, and it was just a weekly update. And there, in some of the episodes you'll hear where, you know, Sean Waltman, when he worked with us, we brought him up from Global, where I went down to Monday Night Raw as debut match. And we went out to dinner, and that tape just came out this past weekend on Tony Khan and NWA and NWA Wrestling. And it's unique because, you know, everyone remembered him as the 1-2-3 kid and where he turned out to be, you know, eventually X-Pac. But that first night he fought Doink the Clown, and he came out as the Common Kaiju kid. And a lot of stuff like that has never been out there. It's just like, you know.
Was this Matt Boren Doink, or is this another Doink?
No, this was not Born Doink at the WWE, at the WWF, at the Manhattan Center. It was the first 6 months, I would say the first 6 or 8 months of Monday Night Raw. And he was the first match of the night, a house show match, never aired. It aired actually, I think it was like 3-4 weeks later. I have actually the date that it debuted on live TV. But, yeah, that was an opening house show match, dark match, say. And, yeah, so, you know, when you listen to the shows and you watch the shows of my co-hosts, which were two of my quote-unquote managers in the business, one was Don Apollo, a personal friend of mine, and the other one was a female manager of mine, Tanya, who was a co-host of my show, and we went on the tour as TNT Connections, you know, back in the days. And it's interesting, if you watch the show, that it gives you the insight. It's not just talking about matches and results. There's a lot of insight to people that worked with the NWA in certain angles. We did back in the days with, you know, Billy Jack Haynes. You know, that's one name that comes to mind, of an angle that was worked out for myself and him under the NWA and UWF. So there's a lot of history there that's going to be coming out. I've kept everything pretty much secret for many, many years. But, hey, the relaunch is here, the debut is here, and it's about time that the NWA and Tony Capone really makes a presence on the internet, and we're working on that right now. We're being very selective of what we're putting out there. And you know, we debuted about 9-10 matches, Tommy Dreamer in the early days, Tony Rumble, you know, Boston Bad Boy, you know, something with Nikolai Volkov and Brooklyn Brawler. But there's so much history there, Steve. It's just incredible. And once the fans get to see the complete catalog, it's going to be like, wow, this is really history in the making with this company.
Yeah, sounds like a great archive. Dr. John, if you have any more questions?
Yes. No, but I have a great comment because, Tony, I have an old and dear friend of yours. I have the lady that was your first ladies' world heavyweight champion in the NAWA back in the day. Susan Green, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
We're so glad to have you here. I was talking with Tony Capone. And so anyway, first of all, you two say hello. And then Susan, if you can remember, because I know you've won many, many championships and many, many belts. If you could tell us how you got got that first ladies world heavyweight title with the NAWA back in the day. So anyway, you two can say hello, and then Susan, if you'd tell us that story, we would be honored.
Hey, how are you doing, Tony?
Susan, I'm doing great. It's been a long time. Good to hear from you. How's everything been on your end?
You've been doing good. I'm still climbing in the ring and doing my thing, and actually had three show up tonight. So I spent about 3 hours out in the gym working with them.
Oh, that's great. That's great to hear. It's great to hear.
Yep, the first time. How did it happen? First match, they had a 10-girl battle royal, or not a battle royal, they had a 10-girl. We each drew names, the who we were going to fight, and the first name I drew out, I didn't even know the girl. I had no idea where she came from, had no idea how long she'd fought, but, you know, she gave me a good fight. It wasn't one of these that you'd ever step in and think you was going to have a pushover. And then after everybody ended up having two or three matches, I ended up being the winner.
Wow. That's great. And how long did you hold that title belt?
Well, the very next month, I guess about 26 days, actually, I went back up and defeated, wrestled Lalani Kai and defeated her. I never, from the time I had it till the time they closed down, I never gave the belt up. They'd always call me in, and I'd be able to make the town. Sometimes they'd have to put me on a little later than what they was wanting to, but I always ended up making the town. As they say in football, I did a double shot.
And sometimes there was triple shots too. Those back in those days, you know, sometimes on the weekend there were triple shots, you know. But going back a little bit with the history of the NWA and the female division of it, and she definitely hit on point. There was a lot of new up and coming talent that was there. I mean, Sweet Destiny, Little Genie back in those days. And, there was classic wrestlers like Bobcat, you know, Cindy Snow and Malaya Hasaka and Kimona Wanalea, who worked with us in the beginning, Lanai Kai. All these girls, and Misty Blue, I saw her on something we did recently. And it was the same thing back then. It was a combination of the best of the best of the females in the industry that had to present themselves, and we acquired some new talent, and we just ran with it, and it was great. I mean, there's so much great memories that are inside of me that are coming out, and from all both aspects, from the male and female side of it, and it's just humbling and honored to be able to speak to a lot of people that made the success of the company what it is today at this point.
It's sad to see so many of the young ones now passing away, because Kat, that was normally traveling with Misty Blue, just recently passed away, you know, one of the girls that I helped train that was with Glow, the farmer's daughter, Cindy, you know, she just passed away. Mm-hmm. And we're talking girls in their 50s, and it's like, that's the new 20.
We never talk about this, Susan, about the I always say there's a, and I don't know why, if it's the beatings that we take in the ring or the abuse of our bodies, but if you look at historically how many wrestlers, even if you want to say under the age of 40, that passed away, and you know, even going down to 35 and 30, and it's just like, I look back now and my 10 bell salute, I'm like, wow, how many guys, you know, Chris Candido. I mean, just guys in the old days that were great guys. Marlon Khan, you know, Tiger Khan, Marlon. I mean, you know, 33, 34. I mean, it's just, it makes you wonder. And I always say, you know, thank God I'm blessed to, you know, I do have some personal, neck damage and nerve damage and everything else and low back like everybody else does. And it's just, I always call it the curse of, the curse of the wrestling business, per se. And some of these people were not even, you know, on drugs or in general. They were just great guys, you know, Ted Penny, back in the days, great guy overall. I mean, Jim, dedicated, and just, driving home from the show, just had a heart attack in the car and just passes away. I mean, there's something there, that curse of the wrestling. And, well, just pull back when you were talking about Kat and, you know, Farmer's daughter.
I can say all my injuries that I have come from out of the ring, you know, the seriousness I've got in the ring is I had a tore up knee and had to take morphine to be able to continue to work. And then I had broke ribs from Moolah and a broke nose. And I don't even remember who gave me the broke nose. I think it was in Japan. But, I mean, that's minor. I said everything that I have physically that kept me out of wrestling in 79 when I had the boating accident and had my neck and back broke. It was a leisure holiday going up to the lake to go some skiing and fishing, you know. So my major injuries that have caused me major layoffs have always come from out of the ring, you know. And then working for the city of Columbia, being a zoning inspector and getting jumped from behind and left for dead and spending 110 days in the hospital in a coma.
Oh, wow.
And then the last 11 days I was actually out of the coma, and they taught me how to walk again, you know, and they basically thought that I never would walk again. And I said, walk again, I'll be back in the ring. Of course, when my neck and back broke, the doctor suggested that I not climb back in. And Joe Blanchard, that gave me my first start in wrestling, I was back out in Texas, and the doctors had released me. And he said, I heard what your orthopedic said. And I said, but you don't have to listen to him. And he says, what do you want to do? And I said, I want to go back in the ring. And he started me off with some younger girls. And I won't say younger. I ended up wrestling Marie D'Leon and Evelyn Stevens, the same one I started wrestling off when I first started.
Right.
So they may not have been wrestling any time soon, but, you know, he ended up putting me back in the ring against them. And when he saw that I still had what I had whenever I went out, then he started calling some promoters from overseas and getting me some overseas contacts, and then I went into booking myself and worked for Mildred Burke in 74 whenever I got aggravated at Lillian Moolah, and went out and started driving the truck whenever I'd have a break, and we sat down out there. I'd work for her, and then I said, well, when am I going to get to work the States? And she says, well, I don't work the States, I just do Japan and Mexico. And I thought, well, I don't want to work just Japan and Mexico. You know, I don't speak English, and part of Canada, I don't speak the French. So, I said, I guess it's time to go back. But she talked to Sam Mushnick, and he ended up putting the NWA women's belt on me. But she was the undefeated champion for the West Coast NWA. And I carried it for the 4 months that I worked for her. And then when I was leaving, she says, well, don't you want a cake? Take it. And I said, no, it's your belt. You know, you defended it from 48 undefeated till 74 or when she retired. And then she put it on me in 74, and I kept it for 4 months. And I can remember going to Mexico and them telling me that I was going to drop it to Lola Gonzalez. And I said, well, if she can beat me, she can take it. But I don't think she can beat me. And then over in Japan, they were sitting there saying that Chicho Obata was going to take the belt from me. And I said, well, you said the right word, take the belt, but I don't think she can. And whenever they saw the dogfight at the end of the match, they realized that nobody was going to get that belt off of me.
It's funny you say that, Susan, because, you know, back in the days, we were wrestlers, but there was also that other side of wrestling called shoot wrestling. And I remember many times in a ring where, you know, you got stretched out and, you know, physically, you know, where, you know, there was a behind-the-scenes beef and it's in the ring and fans looking at it like, oh, this is a great part of the show. But in the meantime, you know, you almost broke your elbow and, I remember specifically a match I did with Jimmy Snuka where I broke the cartilages on the bottom of my nose, where even up to today, my nose can twist on the bottom. It's just like, you know, it was just those Yeah, it was wrestling, but it's not like it is today. Far from it. I mean, there's, you know, that whole shoot wrestling, you know, back in the dressing room days, you know, shoot your opponent. You know, I mean, you listen to promoter, and there was reasons why, but that doesn't exist nowadays at all. I mean, it might to a certain degree, but not like back in those days. And you had to be accepted
then,
back in those days to be involved
but
in the circus.
First time I come back from Japan, and he saw that I had 35 stitches in my head, and I sat there and said, the girl that I wasn't even supposed to wrestle picked up a bucket and hit me in the head. You know, she was a worker, but she was upset that I was jumping out of the ring, and she hit me from behind with me not even knowing she was coming. And then they made them pay for the medical to take me in because I had to work every night, because if I didn't work, I wasn't getting paid, and I couldn't go home, so I had to get paid, so I had to work. And they took me to the hospital every night to get my head unwrapped, and I looked like a mummy from my neck to my top of my head, and they then taped me because I had eyes and nose and a little hole for my mouth, and I said I was sure losing weight because I couldn't get my mouth very wide open. So it was a lot of soup.
I personally gained the respect of the boys in the dressing room because I used to. I love to get hit, you know, what we call stiff. I mean, the stiff you hit me, I used to get a kick out of it. And that goes to anyone from Rick Rude to all those guys from WWF that I fought back in the days. Yeah. And the word got out like, hey, this guy loves it. So why even go after it? Because he just like enjoys it. I mean, you know, it's like, that's what you got. You know, let me see next time. Let me see tomorrow night. You know, and just like, you know, then it's like, you know, I'll leave him alone. Let him do what he has to do. But it was hard to be accepted back in the days, you know, just the ribbing.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to mention names from WF guys, but I got ribbed every night on the road. You know, my clothes in the garbage can with ketchup and mustard on it. And, you know, I remember Great Valentine telling me, no, you just find out who did it. You go back to the next, you know, next town tomorrow night. You do it back to them when they're fighting. And that's how you get the respect. Yeah. You know, so, you know, they don't teach you that no more. You can't.
There weren't any of the girls that was teaching me how to defend myself. And Joe Blanchard, he didn't even smarten me up. When I got to Mula, it was, to be honest, it was Charlie Smith, the referee, that came by and said, baby face over. And I looked at the girl, and I kept trying to make the girl get out of the dressing room because she wasn't supposed to be there. And the White Venus, in the process, I sit there and said, what's a baby face? And she said, you are. And I said, well, how do you know I am? And she said, because you are. I'm the heel. And I thought, what the hell's the heel? And then needless to say, I got smartened up in the dressing room, and I thought, well, if this is the way it is, I can work every night and not worry about it. Yeah.
Right.
Learning what a time limit was and you know, figure out the time and listen to the referee. He's calling the time, and it's like, y'all got me so busy, I'm not knowing what to listen to and not to listen to. But Danny Hodge, when he saw me in Oklahoma, he said, I'm going to teach you how to fight and be prepared. You know, because no one's going to bust your head like that again. You know, so that's, and of course, in Japan, they didn't believe in giving the athletes anesthesia for their sewing up. So they were holding me down while they put 35 stitches in the back of my head and threatened to kill everybody. But I didn't get to kill anybody. But it was, and then Mark Sharp, he ended up showing me how to do a lot. And Hector Guerrero showed me quite a few things, and I sat there and said that just slowly but surely, just people coming around and saying, are you serious? And I said, I don't want to get hurt, you know, and there's people out there that want to hurt you. So they sit there and said, well, if this happens, do this, and just little by little, and then reading, and then everybody coming up, you know, helping me, and I guess learning how, if they try to hook the rope and not go with you, that there's another way you can do other damage to them. And basically, that was the way that I broke Mula's collarbone. Of course, she broke my ribs the night before. So, you know, all was fun and games. You know, you get me, I get to get you. But I guess it wouldn't have been so bad if she wouldn't have called me a wuss. Because the referee had told me that, or a doctor had come in and said, you know, she can't work, her ribs are broke too bad. And then Mula came
in and sit there and said, oh, she's just a wuss. And I said, take me up, I'm no wuss. You know, and of course, whenever she tried to hang on to the second rope to keep from taking a turn, a bill out of the corner, I sit there and her being 5 foot two and me being 6 foot one, I thought, well, I can put the leverage on her if you don't want to go. And the second time that I pulled her, she let go of the rope, and when she went across the rope, I heard the snap like a finger snapping, and she landed, and I saw her come up on her knees and started getting out of the rope, and the referee looked at me and said, if this is a 2 out of 3, you can't leave. And I thought, oh, yes, I can, because it's over. And he said, no, you cannot. I said, look at her. And she'd spun on her knee around and had her hand covering her collarbone, and you saw the blood trickling through her fingers. And he said, you're right, it's over. And I said, of course, the belt couldn't change because it was a 2 out of 3, and you had to have the falls one, you know. And I sit there, and of course, tonight I was supposed to fight her, and I ended up fighting Kitty Adams in New York City, which she lived up there, and her husband was Vince Senior's strong man or bodyguard. You know, he went around with him to make sure everybody stayed off of him. But I sat there and said that they pulled her in to do it because you don't find girls everywhere, and they knew that she knew how to do the basic, and she came in. But Mula learned real fast that I respected her, that I didn't like her, and I didn't care that she didn't like me, but she was going to respect me. And I had other jobs, and none of the other girls would have other jobs. I drove the wrecker for her boyfriend at the time, and I would come in, put the other girls in the car and call him, and when I was gassing up and saying, you know, can I go to the, because back then you had to have them big bag phones, and I didn't have one of those.
Oh, yeah.
So I at the gas station, I called him and said, I'm going to be in about 3 o'clock, can I just go to the shop? And he says, you got the key, go ahead. And I would go to the shop and I'd start driving, because back then you had to, it's not your own call to pick up a car. It was, you listen to the radio, and if you heard a 1050, that was the wreck. And if you heard 1051, it was a good one because the ambulance was en route. So he knew that one of the cars was going to be tore up pretty bad.
He
had me get into a white jumpsuit instead of the blue shirt, and I'd have them on in the blue pants, but he said, get in that white jumpsuit to where I stood out at night, and then everybody would sit there and say, her, you know, and I'd run around giving my card out and we were good, because at this one shop where I pulled it, we did everything. We did from the mechanic work to the transmission work to the rear end work to the painting to putting on new vinyl tops and everything. You didn't have to take it anywhere else. We did it all right in that same shop. And I said, that's what I would tell them, you know. And he says, you got a lot of cars coming in. And I said, well, I just tell them. And I said, but I think it's because I'm a girl. And he said, why do you say that? And I said, there, and says, because all they do is point me saying, her. And then I would have to call somebody else after I got a car hooked up and pulled down the road, meet me at an exit so I can get another wrecker, because he had 5 wreckers, and I would get another wrecker and come back and get another car, because they both want me to pull cars. And I said, let me get this one just out of the way, and I'll be right back. And of course, John, the highway patrol, sat there and said, you got 20 minutes or I'm letting somebody else get it. So I'd have them meet me pretty close. Before I got it totally hooked, I'd have them on the way waiting for me, to where all I had to do is jump out and jump in and get back over there to get the other car. But she didn't like it that I drove the wrecker and I was no longer mowing the grass on her 25 acres. You know, I was the only one that was able to make that 47 tractor go, too.
Wow.
It did good being a Texas farm girl.
You can imagine.
What goes on over there at her compound now, Susan? Have you been over there in the last 10 years or so?
Yeah.
I mean,
whenever it was first sold, it was sold to Babcock Center, where they take care of the handicapped or the autistic children, and they had turned, and I said, you should probably fell over because that horseshoe fountain that would always shoot up the champagne on Christmas wasn't allowed in there on Christmas. Well, they turned that into stalls for the patients to all be sleeping, and they had 12 people down there sleeping, and all had them divided off with little carriers and covered up the fireplace in it. And then the people that worked there slept upstairs, and then they had the two or three that stayed downstairs during the night and while the other one slept. But they would had a 12-car van that in the morning they would all get up, and they had the nurses and everything there that took their made their lunches and everything and got them off him when they went to work for Babcock Center, doing whatever work they did. I think some of them was cutting boards, another one was cutting strings. And now a church bought it from the Babcock Center and has turned it into a, I guess, a wayward home where they're taking care of the homeless and the street people that are willing to give their hearts to God, or they say they're willing to give their hearts to God. Some of their basically, I think, there to have a roof over their head and a warm body, and they do. They all have chores to go 1 week to washing clothes and mowing the grass outside and all. And on the far side of the land that where I lived, over across the water, that part's been sold to another development company, and I think a contractor is going to come in and develop it because the church has said they will pull down the, because Nula had put up razor wire to where nobody could get to the water other than them because she didn't want them fishing in her pond. The contractor had bought it, and this church had said that they would let everybody use the water. Now, it wasn't deep enough to go out there in a boat, although I did see Mula pull Donna Kristen Teller behind the old motorboat, and I walked across it after one of her horses, and I said, if I can walk across it, that water wasn't deep enough to be flying across it on a pair of skis. But I guess if you have enough to drink, it doesn't matter how bad it hurts when you hit.
All right, Steve has got a couple of questions he would like to ask you, Susan. Steve asked, and then Velvet is here. I'd like for Velvet to get a question or two in. So, Steve, what have you got to ask Susan Green?
Was there any contemporary competitors that you wish you could have had work with? I think Shayna Baszler or Io Shirai from Japan would have been great opponents for you.
Yeah, they'd have probably been great opponents, but the ones that I wrestled, I wrestled Blue Nakano before Blue Nakano was Blue Nakano over in Japan.
Oh, wow.
Back in the day. You know, so, I mean, I some of the girls that were just coming up that are coming out now, I hit them back in the 80s and 90s. So some of the Japanese girls are actually sold into wrestling, you know. Some of them do go into it because they want to go into it, but a lot of them are sold into it with their families because the families were so good at it. So
yeah, some of them start very young. And then a follow-up question. I know NWA recognized you in their Hall of Fame, but what do you think about revisionist history with title reigns? WWE has done it too with the women's tag team titles. Like, they kind of ignored the Leilani Kai, Judy Martin title reign. I wanted to get your thoughts on, like, title reigns being recognized.
They haven't ignored Judy and Leilani's. When they had the titles, it was WWF. And then he lost the rights to use the WWF, and they had lost the titles, or they had been fired and was no longer working for Vince whenever he lost the title of being able to use WWF, and he had to turn to WWE. So when they were the title owners of the WWF, he was running and there was no competition going on as far as that. But now he don't recognize WWF because he can't recognize WWF because he lost the lawsuit against those call letters.
Yeah, the Wildlife Federation. Yeah.
You know, in fact, a couple of the Hall of Fames that I know that Lilani Kai is in, she don't even recognize herself as being a glamour girl in the Hall of Fames that I know she's in. You know, she goes as Lilani Kai.
Thank you so much for asking my questions, and Dr. John, continue, please.
Tell me, what have you got to ask your great, great wrestling teacher?
Hey, Susie, just got to see you, 3 hours ago?
yeah, about 3 hours.
My question is this. You touched on, you know, the moolah and the stuff. It's hard to say. Was Mae Young? Yeah, I know she's small, but was she as tough as nails as she seemed to be? Like we saw older.
Oh God!
Was she tougher when she was younger?
Let me tell you, I was 15 years old, and my brother drove me to Phoenix, Arizona to wrestle Mae Young, Johnny Mae Young, and I walked in there and about had a heart attack when she was chewing on us. Joe was trying to get me to give up wrestling so I could take the scholarship that I had won in swimming for University of Texas. Because I was a swimmer in high school, and I sat there and said, all I have to do is graduate high school. I don't have to go to college. It doesn't matter that I won that scholarship. Well, he thought that this was going to be the woman that taught me a lesson and did me in, because it's not the only veteran that could beat the tar out of me and try to make me change my mind. But I was purple 2 weeks later where this woman touched me when I was off on Christmas holidays. There wasn't anywhere she touched me that I wasn't turning purple from the time I got in that ring. It was 12 minutes, and I said, I don't think. And Joe always told me, you got to know where you're at, whether you're upside down, up, right side up, on your nose, on your tail, on your feet, on your head, in a corner, what corner, how far from the ropes you are, how far from the ring you are, how far high up is the ring. And it was like, how can I remember all that? And I said, in that match with Johnny Mae Young, I learned the real fast that I had to remember it real fast, because she threw me every which way but loose.
It sounds like what you did to me.
pretty much. A little bit of it got done to the guys today.
Oh yeah, yeah. Poor Jackson is I think he's in a. He said he was taking a shower. Then he was gonna find some ice.
Well, you're telling me better get some Epsom salts in a hot tub.
Right. But my follow up to that is being that style that some of us older generation like and have been instilled in us. When you taught us what you just said, we had to know where we were at every minute of every point in the match.
Oh yeah.
It is very vital to know that, you know, it's a setup for something else or it's an escape for something else. And like when you told the story of when I took that beating from you, people didn't understand that, you know, they asked me later that, well, why, you know, were certain things that happened that Susan said, you know, why did they happen that way? I said, because it was all about timing and precision and what was called.
We knew where
I needed to be. So I wore it well. But I'm just saying, but it's a timing issue sometimes, and sometimes it's not. And
oh,
like
yeah.
you told the guys today, you know, you can't, if I'm giving you 10 minutes, don't try to slam 10 minutes into 5 minutes. If
yeah.
I'm giving you five, there's no way to 10 minute match in 5 minutes. Don't do all that. And
not,
they
yeah,
were looking at you like you were sideways.
Yeah, I don't know. I think me and D went close to 10 minutes whenever I called it. And I don't know if they heard me say super kick or not. But when they, like,
no,
nobody
heard that.
He what? And I thought, I didn't stutter. I didn't even say another word. It's just whenever I said super kick, that D was questioning me. And when I threw him in, it was like he saw me out there in the middle of the ring and I was turning around and it was like, oh, Lord.
Yep. He threw it, though.
Yeah, he threw it. And I took it, and of course
and
I took
it. Exactly.
Where was my hand, you know, because everyone said I had to cover up, and my hands were down by my side, you know.
Yeah, you didn't cover up at all. That was
no
beautiful super
you know,
kick earlier. But
yeah.
I'm just saying, it's all about, nobody heard you say that, but the whole thing
yeah.
is it's all about timing that you were trying to show them. And
yeah.
it is a dance. It is an art form, but it also is a sport to us. Thank you so much, Susan.
Oh, yeah. yeah
All right,
Dr. Welcome, David.
Yeah, it was great watching Susan train these guys and teaching them what to do, how to do it, and when to do it, and that was just so important. And she's a great teacher. I can tell that because I'm a former college professor, and I can tell Susan Green knows more about teaching wrestling than anyone I have ever seen. Susan, it was a pleasure to watch you do that. We've got about 15 minutes left. Does anybody else have it? Chaz, do you have a question you'd like to ask our wonderful guest, Susan Green? I know you can find
well,
him down there.
I'd just like to say, Susan, thank you so much for coming on and telling us about, you know, how wrestling was back when you were in the sport and back when you got your start. And if I seem to remember correctly,
I'm not
you once...
just in the sport. I'm still in the sport. You
know,
I
know you're
on the big. I don't get on the big calls list, but I'm still doing it. The independent, you know, that's where a lot of people say you're retired. And it's like, oh no, I'm not.
Oh, that's
you know,
awesome.
You just gotta come.
So maybe if you need a manager, I can manage you against Velvet, because I'd love to
no.
see him take a beating one more time.
Oh, that would be funny. She said that earlier.
I'd be laughing because I'd be safe. I'm outside the ring.
Well, yeah, okay. You think so?
Yeah.
Anyway, my question was one of the more intriguing wrestlers that I remember from back in the 70s was Paula Kay. What are your remembrances of Paula Kay?
Paula Kay was tough. Paula Kay, when we hit, we hit. She sat there and said, that's what the people want to see. That's what, you know, and that's why Moolah saw that we were being called on. Promoters was calling her, asking to have me and her sent to the West Coast up against Canada. I mean, we'd leave here and we'd go into Alabama, to Oklahoma, Louisiana, across the top part of Texas, into Arizona, New Mexico, and then work our way from Los Angeles to San Francisco, up to Portland, Oregon, to Washington State, and then across Vancouver, Canada, all the way across to Toronto. And promoters just could not get enough of me and me and Paula Kay, because they said we never know what y'all two are going to pull out of the hat. Because we gave them matches more like the men were having, and they were used to having seeing the girls have a cat match, and we would work matches more like the men, you know. And it wasn't that we didn't, that's what they wanted, that's what we gave them, you know. We'd ask them what they wanted and they would tell us what they wanted, and it's like, okay, we're just gonna have to, well, we go back, we're gonna have to spend a couple of days in the gym to get this 6 months of matches that we drilled in our head out of our head. People, believe it or not, wrestling for the females, we end up about every 50 years, we go through a switch. You know, it didn't last as long, which I'm glad that the Divas didn't last as long as they lasted, because I was upset with the Divas. I don't, everyone blames GLOW when they're hurting us. And, well, I helped train the girls in GLOW. You know, everybody knew GLOW was just there for when the ropes were like rubber bands, and I told Jackie that, you know, we had to tighten those up. She said, no, that's what we want them. And I taught them how to take the bumps, and I was teaching them, and I found Mount Fuji in Las Vegas moving some of the hardware for the shows, and I said, you know, we need to get her. Well, Jackie went over and talked to her, and they came over, and I explained to her that she would be, because she looked oriental with the weight and everything on her, and I said, you know, we'll make you a Mount Fuji. And, of course, that name stuck with her, and then she passed away about 2 years ago from complications from diabetes, you know. But it's just one of those situations that you people wanted to watch that show because they wanted to watch that style of wrestling. Well, then they went in, but they wanted to see the female wrestlers. They wanted to see what we did, and then I was considered a high flyer, which I threw the drop kicks and the head scissors, and I came off the top rope with the frog splash, and Dickie Williams was the only one that threw drop kicks. A couple of other ones, George Grable threw a drop kick, and then I didn't consider doing a corner scissors where you do a handstand and get your legs hooked around the girl's head and flipping them out of the corner as being a high flyer, because all you're doing is doing a handstand. But that considered her a high flyer, but Nola sat there, and I got a lot of calls because I went on the top rope. But I think the female wrestlers are going to eventually come back to where they're going to have to fight like we did back in the 60s and 70s, where when we hit, and I will have to sit there and say, whenever Mula stomped you, there ain't nobody that's ever stomped you any harder than Mula can stomp you. she was a very good stomper, and she could leave a mark in a heartbeat if she stomped you.
Well, that's awesome. Thank you so much for answering my questions.
Thank you.
Yep, that's great. And Malcolm, do you have a question for Susan Green?
Yeah, I have a question, and then I'd like to ask Susan if she'd like to try and do an NAWA creative commercial with me, if Tony Capone would allow it. Because Velvet told me, Susan, that you had a run-in with him with a Coke machine. And I remember that commercial that Mean Joe Green did with that kid with the Coke. Yeah. And I thought maybe, you know, Susan, you could like have a bad night and I could be standing there with offering you a Coke or something like that. I'm trying.
You figure it out. I'm there for it.
and then my question for you is, one of the greatest wrestlers I ever met, I even told Hulk Hogan, he was one of my other favorite wrestlers besides Hulk Hogan, Rowdy Roddy Piper. Did you ever get to meet Piper or work with him in anything?
I traveled the road with Rowdy when I was out on the West Coast in Oregon and got to meet his family and kids. He had his farm up there.
Wasn't he
great
a great guy? He was a great guy to me every time I met him.
He'd give you the shirt off his back, and if he had another pair of pants, he'd give you those pants, you know.
he called me a super fan, and he wrote in my autograph, "I'm the reason Hogan lost his hair, and Hogan never did me."
Rowdy was able to come up with some of the fabulous moves that are angles that promoters and I shouldn't say promoters, because promoters had bookers that booked the matches, and they were usually old wrestlers that were no longer able to wrestle that were in the booking part, and Roddy could go in there and say, well, I'm going to tell you this, and they would take it and run with it because they knew whatever Ronnie said was going to turn to gold.
Yeah, Susan, I was at Wrestle Reunion 2011. We were at the Westin Hotel, and it was Piper, Orndorff, and Orton, the three bad guys from first WrestleMania. Orton even had his arm in a cast. And Paul Orndorff never liked Hogan. And every time I did my impression of Hogan for him, he would give me the finger. So, like, he started to do it when we were taking the picture. And Roddy Piper goes, "Hey, Mal," he goes, "Hey, Paul, this is a family event. Put that finger away."
Yeah. I'm surprised they didn't grab that finger and have it bent down the other way to where it wasn't showing.
Well, Orndorff said he hated Hogan, but he liked me. So he only did it to joke with me.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. Thank you. And the only person that has not spoken to our guest of honor tonight is the one and only Granny Hulkster. Do you have anything you'd like to say to Susan?
Well, first of all, Susan, I know I got to talk to you Wednesday night on Pop Culture Stars, which was an honor. Mm-hmm. And just listening to your stories tonight, it's just been an amazing time. And pretty much, I think everybody asked a lot of great questions, you know, and everything. And I think as far as questions go, I think everything's been covered, I mean, that I was going to ask, you know. So, what was one of your most favorite times in the business that you've ever done?
My most favorite time is being able to stop. I used to love it when the fans came up to ringside to get your autograph. I loved it whenever I'd be in a hurry running out to try to meet a taxi or something, and someone was holding it, knowing that you were in a hurry, and you saw them hold up a piece of paper for an autograph, and I'd stop and give autographs, you know, because I look at it this way, which I know Vince wants to make money, and he charges for those girls and guys to give autographs. But if it wasn't for people like them and you that wanted to get to know me or get to hear my stories, I wouldn't be who I am. You know, I would just be another person sitting on the wall.
Well, you know, it's kind of funny that Malcolm mentioned, you know, when Malcolm was talking, you know, that he called, you know, that I think he said Roddy Piper called him a super fan, you know.
Yeah.
I've actually been called that myself by many, many people, you know, and like I said, I'm not even a wrestler. I'm just a fan because I love the sport. I love being able to interact with the wrestlers, and it's just so much fun.
But I go to many places where I go and wrestle to this day, especially when I get in Texas. And I can see people, and I'm sure that whenever I was growing up, and from when I was 5 years old and saw my first match, and me and my father just happened to get the very same seats for the next 10 years. We were seated at the same seats that we got seated at the very first match, you know, and I'm sure people,
awesome.
Wrestlers would look at and see that we were there. And you know, we were fans that were, they could always count on being there. It may not be anybody else, but they count on me and my father was going to be there. I look out in places and I can see people two or three rows back that I see there, you know, regularly, that aren't right there on front row. And as I try to tell people when I'm training them, there's people that are up there in four and five balconies up, you know, and now they have big screens, so they're able to see you a little bit easier. But back in my day, we didn't have big screen TVs. We looked like a little midget running around down there, and that's why we had blonde hair and black hair and different color tights.
It's kind of funny, you know, how you said that you and your, you know, father always had the same seats and everything. I remember when traditional championship wrestling was running in Arkansas. I mean, we made it to a lot of the TV tapings in Fort Smith and Clarksville and everything. And pretty much they always had me and my family always on the front row. I was in the very center seat facing the camera because they knew, especially with the heels, they knew that Granny was going to interact somehow because the heels were going to get in my face and I was going to holler back. So, you know.
Yeah. the promoters like to see the people get aggravated and jump up and down and throw stuff and do whatever they can back in the day. You know,
well, Now, Granny was very good. I never threw anything at anybody. I may have gotten in their face. I may have, like, doubled up my fist, you know, like, I'm not scared of you, you know, but I never threw anything at anybody. Now, Tommy Dreamer, he took my cane out of my hand, and he used it on Matt Riviera the very last TCW show.
Yeah.
And, Brian Thompson's just saying to me, Granny, this isn't your fans bring your own weapons match. What do you think you're doing, you know? And, I mean, you just don't stop Tommy Dreamer from doing something like that. I mean, I'm not going to stop him from doing something like that.
Yeah.
All right, well, Granny, thank you very much. We're down to 4 minutes. I'm going to turn this show back over to Chaz because, Chaz, I've had the best time in the last hour and 10 minutes you could have ever imagined. I get to interview my favorite wrestler, and I got to watch her teach for 3 hours today. So I'm on an all-time Susan Green high. Take it away, buddy.
Well, thank you. I mean, it's so, again, going back to our central theme of the show and of the NAWA, which is bringing back that old-school wrestling, the traditional form of wrestling with the new school vibe, and to see Susan still active and bridging that gap between what I consider to be the first glory days of women's wrestling back in the 60s and 70s and seeing to where it's gone now. I mean, it's quite refreshing to see that a lot of the people that were there that are still contributing, that are still making it happen on the scene today. I think it's just wonderful.
The young men that I was training today, I sat there and said, I've wrestled in 7 decades, and it is both just up to drop their mouth because they didn't think I was that old. Okay. And I said, if it's in your heart, you can't let it go. You know, it runs through your veins, and it's just something that stays there, you know. And when I feel like I'm broke down and I can't keep going, then I will step away from it. I will, but at this time I'm still able to
Amen.
Move.
Amen.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So at this portion of the show, Susan, do you have anything you'd like to announce, anything you'd like to promote, shout outs, that kind of thing?
Look on the internet, on Facebook. I have my gym there. It's a gym in Pain and Glory. It gives my cell phone number. Call me. I will call back. I don't answer numbers that I don't know, but I will call back if you leave a message. And I have gotten many students. And a lot of them show up, and I want everybody to understand wrestling is a lot harder than it looks.
Well,
ring that I train in is what I trained in. It's Johnny Valentine, Thunderbolt Patterson. I know him as Bob. I know Bob is Bob. And this, I'm talking about Sergeant Slaughter and Blackjack Mulligan. Bobby Shane, Sherry, the Sheik. Many of them wrestled. You know, they stepped in this ring and they wrestled in this ring that I train in. So it's got history behind itself. You know, and you might as well land on concrete if you land on my ring.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for playing is what I say. Say thanks for playing.
It teaches you how to protect yourself.
If you can bump in that ring, you can bump in any ring in the world, trust me.
Yeah.
Well, that's awesome. We appreciate it. Thank you so much for coming on tonight.
Yeah. I appreciate it.
No, I truly appreciate you having you on tonight.
I anytime you need me, just give John a call, or give me a call, and I'd be happy to stay up and talk. If we're able to get something going with NAWA, I'm ready to go. You know, I just train and ride my Harley.
I hear you. Tony, any shout outs you want to give for the week?
Before I give a shout, I just want to go back to something that Malcolm said, which he probably doesn't know this, but he's talking about that Mean Gene commercial with Coke, and that was actually shot in my hometown at Memorial Field in Mount Vernon, which is now a historic landmark in New York. And that iconic, I've been there tons of times, wrestled in that outside arena quite a few times. But, yeah, it's called Memorial Field in Mount Vernon. You can look it up, and that's where the Mean Joe Green Coke commercial was shot, Malcolm, right in that hallway. That's literally, you know, like about 10 blocks from my house, you know, literally very close to my house.
Okay.
But,
Chaz,
wow, that's
amazing. Awesome.
I just want to thank the fans and everyone else and the panel, and I just want to say, you know, Jingle Ball, Daytona Beach, or Ocean Center, on December 19th, Saturday night, live on Fight TV, and just watch for our debut show, which is going to be starting on Fight TV Network on the first Thursdays of January at 8 p.m. And you can reach me online at Tony Capone, NAWA, on Facebook, and I get back to each and every person personally. And with that, again, thank you on the panel. And Susan, I'm going to get in touch with you, and we'll talk from there.
Okay. All right.
Thank you, Tony. Velvet, announcements, shout-outs for the week.
Everybody be blessed, stay safe. Let's keep old school alive. That's what I got to say. Thank you very much.
Awesome. Granny.
Everybody have a great week. Stay safe and just be good to each other. And just I love y'all. So I was glad to be a part of the show tonight.
Oh, thank you. See, finally, Granny says she loves me. Since I'm part of you all, she loves me.
Chaz is yet to be determined. You know, loving you is yet to be determined.
Take it back now, don't
you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, whatever.
Sure, take it back now, why don't you?
Yeah.
Steve, anything
you
want to say for the week, brother?
You can find me on Twitch and Twitter at StellarSteven, twitch.tv. Twitch.tv/StellarSteven. Check out njpwworld.com for some of their events. G1 Climax 30 wrapped up weekend. Definitely some great matches in that tournament. And reach out to me and talk about it. All right. So those are my plugs for the week.
Awesome. All right, Malcolm, you're up.
Yeah, Tony. I just wanted to ask you, are you going to need me the weekend of the 22nd and the 23rd of January?
I'm not sure.
I got this Hollywood show I'm really looking forward to. Four ladies that played hench girls on the Batman TV show, Sharon Winters, Gina Hill, Terry Moore, and another lady are all going to be there. Peter Dayal was going to play Dick Grayson, Robin before Burt Ward got the role. And Lou Gossett Jr. and Lisa Ibeck are going to be there from Officer and the Gentleman, Frankie Avalon, Mickey Dolenz of the Monkees. I've got to go to this show, so I want to work with you on still being able to do your show and still being able to go to this show, whether I got to take an airplane there or whatever I got to do. So.
It looks like that weekend we're open. Our next comeback is going to be February 6th back at Ocean Center. I think it's going to be announced. It's February 6th, the first Saturday of February.
I just don't want – you're my new friend, and I just don't want to leave you flat. You know,
Malcolm, you don't know. Maybe I'll be coming out with you, and we'll go out to the event together.
Oh, yeah, I'd love it if you go to Hollywood show me.
Never know, my man. You never know.
I already got a room at the Marriott Marquis. An extra. I got two beds if you want to go.
Wow, the Marriott Marquis. Way to go, Ric Flair. There goes the neighborhood. Tell me about it.
Yes, it is.
Well, I'm gonna give a couple of brief announcements for the week. Please, everybody, be safe. Take good care of each other. Check out the NAWA both on Facebook, on Twitter, at Tony Capone NWA on Facebook, at Chaz Moretti on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter, and also at www.nawawrestling.com. I'll give you your entire NAWA fix for the week. And as they always said in the business, Dr. John, take us home.
I'll take everybody home. Had a great time with Susan Green tonight. It's always good to have Tony Capone. Chaz, you're a pretty good co-host. I'll keep you again for next week. All of our guests, thanks a lot. We'll see you. That's right. I can be pretty tough
thank
now.
You,
I'll see everybody next week, Sunday night, 10 p.m., on the hottest spot for wrestling on the Internet, Wrestling Tonight. Join us.
And Bell will be glad to be your new co-host after you fire Chaz Moretti.
Everybody.
Thanks, everybody. Appreciate it. Enjoy your night. Be safe.